Honorable Member, my apologies. I thought you are part of the delegation from the department. I always wonder about this sitting arrangement when members describe the department or the entity or whoever coming to account with the other side, so that when they fire questions, they must see the people that they are firing at. I suppose they are. Any further apologies? Let's start. I think maybe before we start, there seems to have been a misunderstanding, I think, between ourselves and the department. When we spoke with the minister, it appears that there was an impression from the department that they are going to present about landfill size. Initially, from our program, we were supposed to deal with the granting of extension for submission of industry waste plans. We're supposed to get the rationale. Something that was raised when we were in a joint sitting with the select committee of the NCOP. So the minister was of the view that that deals with the waste tire program. And she requested that she would like to be present when we did that. And then we ended up with a mental size. But I propose that we proceed on the understanding that we will still receive a briefing on a granting of extension of industry we plan. So it's something that they will then schedule it in the next quarter. We will then deal with it. I think the third or the fourth week, when we come back in October, we will then deal with that issue. I must also say that there is a tentative date that we have come up with for the colloquium on climate change. The date proposed, I think, is the 21st of October. I'm just clicking particularly from the side of the department notes so that you can then do the necessary arrangement and look at the diary so that we can confirm this date. We want it to take place on in 30th of October because the climate change conference, the 22nd, is going to take place I think the first week or towards the first week of November. So we want to have that before we go to Morocco. Those of us who will be delegated to go, those who will not be delegated, we then facilitate a platform where we can engage with the issues that we discuss there. So I am proposing, honorable members, that let's proceed and receive this briefing on the landfill site, on the proviso that we still receive the briefing that we intended to get today. I don't know whether there are new faces who need to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name again is Mark Gordon. I'm the Deputy Director General for Chemicals and Waste Management. I just want to introduce the team to you today. Michelle Governor, the Chief Director from my Vice Chancellor.
Good morning, all. My name is Michelle Govender. I'm the Chief Director responsible for hazardous waste management and licensing within the Chemicals and Waste Branch in Environmental Waste.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I've been here before. I'm about the Deputy Director General Legal Authorization Compliance and Enforcement.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Briswa Ndibongo, Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the DG.
I see a gentleman, not from the department.
No, Chair, I'm not from the department.
Where are you from?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Wahid Patel. I represent the SA Tire Manufacturers Conference.
Excuse me, can we then get the DPG to get through the presentation?
Thanks, Chair. So the presentation we're doing today is on the status of landfill sites in South Africa. Chair, we've spoken about landfill sites and the management thereof, challenges of the progress and the project that we've been doing for many years, and we thought it's good also that we give the House an update of where we are regarding this landfill sites in the country. So I thought we just outlined very quickly the roles and responsibilities, the status of the disposal sites and the facility, the licensing process. I thought we'd go into some history and background into where we're coming from in terms of the problems facing municipalities and communities and citizens at large in terms of the impact, the negative impact of the badly, poorly managed landfill sites, the progress with licensing of these unlicensed landfill sites, challenges, interventions, recommendations going forward. In terms of the constitutional mandate, it comes from Section 24, everybody has a right to an environment that's not harmful to the health and well-being. We have the National Environmental Management Waste Act that sets out a mandate for the licensing of waste management activities, including landfill sites. So any landfill site that is run in the country, be it a general waste landfill site or a hazardous waste landfill site, it requires a license. So the national department, we are responsible for hazardous waste management. Provincial departments are responsible for the management of general waste, which is the not so noxious or toxic or hazardous waste. And the local government really responsible for setting municipal bylaws, amongst others issues like littering, the burning of waste, uncontrolled burning of waste, illegal dumping, uncontrolled salvaging of waste, and so forth. And also the issue around the compliance of and monitoring of landfill sites, which is a joint function between national and provincial government. To some extent, municipalities also have bylaws where they can fine, enforce certain aspects around burning of waste. Municipalities have a function to enforce their own bylaws, which comes with fines from the municipality as well. Going forward now, we have a country about 826 landfill sites. Some of them are operating legally, some illegally, some privately owned, some owned by municipalities. And we're giving you some of the numbers there. And in terms of the status of these sites, I'm going to give you shortly a table in terms of how we're approaching them. So when we say the illegal, the unlawful, basically in terms of either not having a license, and the history here is that sometimes a municipality will plan a city or a town where they really plan in terms of the integrated development planning a site for a landfill. Others would find historically a hole in the ground and somebody put dumped a truckload of waste, and eventually people thought, now this is a landfill site. And for many years they just practiced as if that is a landfill site. So some are poorly sited, wrong place, with major impact on the environment. And many of these sites actually have been closed down and in the process of closing them down because they poorly cited, and they actually have not taken any science into account where these sites were being planned. So to date, we have right now, after about 3 years of running this project, about 55 sites that are being licensed to date, 55 out of 69 that we left with, and the balance that have really been now managed by municipalities themselves. Just to say that all these licenses require an environmental impact assessment, and they must run a process. Specifically, it requires that an independent environmental assessment practitioner is appointed, an application must be made, fee must be paid, a process must be undertaken, and in terms of various reports that must be submitted, there are time frames for all of these, and applications are submitted together with what is known as a basic assessment report that covers all the scientific aspects, control aspects, conditions regarding the management of a site. And after a period of time, an EIA is then produced, and other parts of the department then undertakes an approval of the EIA, and this is done at the provincial level for general landfill sites, and then a license is issued by the provinces for that particular site. So the competent authority here in this case is the province, and they have about 30 or 45 days in which to review, accept or reject the project. Going with that is a report that is submitted by the Department of Water and Sanitation, which is called a Record of Decision, that covers aspects surrounding the discharge of water, use of water, discharge of leachate, which is an effluent that comes up of the landfill site that is issued by the Department of Water and Sanitation. So just to give you some background again, in terms of where we're coming from, municipalities have had a capacity challenge around licensing their sites, managing it, them in a proper manner, managing environmental impacts of them. We've had complaints, I think we've dealt with in this house, surrounding the burning of waste at landfills, access control at landfill sites, and so forth, and the illegal dumping as well. So together with this is that, you know, we really in the country run a program and a system called the South African Waste Information System, where we from time to time have produced reports of how much waste was produced in the country, how much is recycled, and so forth. So the data around the volume of waste, the type of waste coming onto site is absolutely critical, and municipalities together with other industries are required in to submit data on the amount of waste that is disposed to landfill. The aspect of funding is also a challenge, funding of landfill sites has been a problem. In fact, to engineer landfill sites cost millions of rand to just engineer landfill sites to proper environmental standards. So we can understand the challenges that municipalities also face, budgetary challenges in terms of providing safe landfilling of waste. Moving forward, the department then undertook a few years ago, it was in 2013, after we conducted a study after many years, that in the intergovernmental forum, which is called MINTEC, it is a forum comprising the Department of Environment together with provinces, where we started trying to understand how we could assist municipalities with the illegal landfill sites and how we could assist them with the funding that was required to undertake this. The minister then made a commitment, and we started this project, that to date we've spent about 32 million rand in terms of licensing and bringing these landfill sites up to spec. Moving forward in terms of the progress, sort of just give you a snapshot table of where we are currently and basically where we come from. So in 2007, we conducted and commissioned a study aimed at identifying and determining the number of waste disposal facilities that were not licensed for the country. So we appointed a consultancy team that went out to surveys all across the country, and we came up with a number of about 341 sites that required us to address them, either in terms of closing them down, which were unsuitably cited, or regularizing them in terms of proper licenses, or providing safer controls around some that were already being licensed, or some that needed to be decommissioned, and so forth. So the total amount of sites were 202 applications within received from the provinces, submitted for, received from the municipality, submitted to the provinces for decision-making, together with what we call the record of decision that's required by the Department of Water and Sanitation. A total amount of waste licenses of 202 that need to be issued. The challenges we faced, Chair and honorable members, that a lot of the information in terms of an environmental impact assessment is information that's required of a site. In many cases, there was insufficient information. At times, when liaising with the municipality, we do a survey and we find out that, we have an agreement to listen to a certain site. When we go back there a few months later, the municipality tells us, actually, no, it's not this site anymore. Please come here. It's another site. So those are some of the challenges we're dealing with. There were issues around land ownership and us dealing with some tribal authorities and some of the municipalities as well. And some sites required further specialist studies, geotechnical studies, and some of them near wetlands also required us to do further specialist studies. Moving on then, the backlog that was undertaken in 2007 came up with 581 of these sites. We then proceeded in 2008-09, addressing about 88 of these sites, and we were left with 341 privately owned sites. What we are saying that some of them were transfer stations that didn't require licensing, some were closed on, in fact, and we started centralizing some of the functions and within the municipality in terms of how they can better manage waste within the municipality. Moving on to, there's a lot of numbers here, but I thought the table really would show us better in terms of what's happening. If we can go to that table right at the end. So where we stand right now, this is a summary of the previous slides. We went into some detail of explaining where we were. But right now, today, we have 55 sites this current financial year. That is the last of the 341 sites that needed to be regularized. To date, we have six waste management licenses that have been issued, 24 records of decision that have been received from the Department of Water and Sanitation, 9 reports from municipalities outstanding, 24 reports submitted for decision-making, and just...
So why did you jump the other slide?
So I thought there were a lot of detail around the 10 numbers, but I can go back to them if you want. I don't have
to be spoken to. Are we not supposed to be taken through that?
I can. My apologies. I'll go back to 2012-13. It's a year-by-year progress from 2007. So 2012-13, department initiated licensing process on behalf of the facilities, and such 56 facilities were licensed 2012-13. 2013-14, the cabinet La Costa held in August 2013, we took a decision again to license the remaining waste disposal facilities. From the lessons learned, when the 56 facilities were licensed, verification and consultation of affected municipalities needed to be conducted again to ascertain if there are any facilities which have been licensed since 2007. So what was happening is that we were working with like a moving target. And what would happen is that some of these sites would be small. So you identify them as the site that needs to be licensed. You come back a year later and there's no site. So every year you have to verify, you have to validate, and things like that. So we did a consultation again, did a verification, and the number of unlicensed facilities reduced from 285 to 202. And these facilities were all licensed in that period. So From 341, we licensed 56. 2012-13, we were left with a balance of 285. From 35 to 202. And these facilities are all licensed in that period. We're saying that 83 facilities were removed from the list of unlicensed facilities for the following reasons. Municipalities undertook themselves to license it at their own cost. And remember that this project was really a project that was managed by the Department of Environment. Under normal circumstances, we would not do this. But we did because of the backlog, and we project managed this and also provide the funding. We found out then that the municipalities undertook themselves to license it. Some were privately owned, and as such applied for their own licenses and paid for their own licenses. Some were just dumping sites, a hole in the ground that needs to be cleaned up, taken to a proper landfill site, and some of the sites never existed. So where our initial survey in 2007 identified the site, we go there years later and find that, you know, there's actually no site there. So as I said, there was a moving target. Municipalities were also cleaning up as well. They were also licensing sites themselves, and we were able to provide validation and verification in the follow-up years while we were proceeding with the project. In 2013-14, that financial year, a total of 258 facilities were licensed, 41 facility licensed from municipalities, 42 removed from the list because they were privately owned and some were cleaned up. 258 facilities that are licensed have no infrastructure. So I guess it's 12-13 and now 13-14. In 2014 again, the department still received licensing requests from municipalities for facilities that did not form part of the backlog study. So like I said, here this is like a moving target. You complete the survey, the following year, through our intergovernment forum, municipalities will then say, but please, we have some more sites, some new sites that need to be licensed. And that's exactly what happened, and new sites were added, and sites were removed, and we had to constantly consolidate this target going forward. We end up now, this year, with 55 sites in the third year now, and the final year of dealing with this backlog. We left the balance of 55 sites requiring licensing, and that's the table I was talking to, with 6 out of them being issued licenses. We have a licensing task team between the provinces and ourselves that manage the progress of licensing. We have a forum where we manage the service providers. We have a forum with HODs that report on this, and we have a forum where provincial MECs meet with the Minister of Environment, where we also manage the progress of this project. So we come a few years since 2012. We now at the tail end of dealing with this massive task, and we were concluding with a number of lessons learned and issues that we need to address going forward here. So the last two slides, just to summarize some of the issues. Burning of landfill sites is an illegal matter that requires enforcement and compliance, and between the departments, the provinces, and the municipalities, we are addressing this matter together with illegal dumping. And we understand the issues facing poorly managed sites. We have waste pickers that live off the sites, that's the livelihood. There are issues of dignity, issues of health hazards, issues of safety, and that is why these sites have to be licensed in a proper manner. So although we needed an integrated approach to solving these issues, and such it was a combined effort between national departments, provincial departments, and municipalities to address this mammoth task. Going forward, we have constant engagement and forums with OPTA, CELDA, MISA, which is the Municipal Infrastructure Association, National Treasury in terms of funding, and we believe moving forward we will be able to overcome a lot of the constraints in terms of providing a safer environment for people. So the last slide is some of the issues we are dealing with intergovernmentally with COPTA, the Back to Basics program in COPTA, with Treasury and CELDA, And these are the summary of some of the issues, and it's the last slide. Moving forward with issues around institutional governance, what are the forums that's required, what are the institutions, how do we coordinate better, how do we properly better manage the issue of licensing moving forward. Integrated planning and development is a big challenge. So every municipality is required to have an IDP, Integrated Development Plan. Some of them follow to the T in terms of where landfill sites must be sited, how they must be licensed, where they must be positioned, how far away from communities and so forth. And again, the planning function is at the municipal level. There are issues of funding and budgetary constraints, and hence the department took it upon themselves to fund this project. Moving forward, we are saying that municipalities should prioritize funding, the issue of funding through the fiscus, also in terms of the division of revenue, appropriation, and so forth, that municipalities must prioritize waste management, and particularly in this case, landfill sites. We also uncovered the issues around management and operations. So a landfill site requires a landfill manager, a weighbridge, an operator, a security guard, proper fencing, proper lighting, proper controls around what time it must open, what time it must close, exit control, and so forth. So these are the issues we have tightened up in our permits, issues of capacity building and awareness in terms of illegal dumping and so forth, and the issue of recycling, that even for municipalities, a lot of the waste can actually be recycled and not dumped into a landfill site. Compliance and enforcement is a matter that also came up, and we're dealing with this with our colleagues in the provinces around how we get better compliance and enforcement of landfill sites. And together with that, it's beefing up regulatory and legislative aspects as well in terms of enforcement of bylaws, enforcement of regulations, and how we tighten up legislation moving forward. With that, Chair, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG. Honorable Edward, eager to engage. Yeah, so if you can shoot, yeah. Honorable Nyan, all the
so you can be serious. This is what I'm passionate about. Well, thank you so much for the presentation. I know that you've had a lot of challenges since we started to get to know you, and a lot of stuff has been really greatly improved. A couple of questions. Let me start with the 90 party owned site that you said are being decommissioned. Is there a specific reason why all of them are decommissioned, or are you decommissioning them to the privately owned ones because you can't regulate them properly, or is there any way that we can rather partner with the private sector, especially to save costs, et cetera, et cetera? And then when you say that you close down a site, especially with the licensing stuff, et cetera, et cetera, how do you rehabilitate that site? If it was illegal in the first place, my head wants to tell me that there's pollution and irregular, obviously, the soil, et cetera, et cetera. So how will you rehabilitate the site? Who is to do it? Whose responsibility would that fall? Where would that fall? And then also the time frame. How long does it take to rehabilitate a landfill site? And then you said it's illegal for burning of waste. I don't know if you remember, we spoke about it last year. But specifically with the elections that just passed, a lot of the local staff issues were brought to our attention than normal. And specifically in Mpumalanga, I know that there's, I can't remember the town now, I'll get the name here, that are still burning, but they're not only burning it, they're burning tires on the site, so it keeps burning for longer. But it's also, it's not, there is a legal site, but there's also an illegal site. I mean, it's supposed to be a granted site, but it ends up becoming too full, and then you know, people just start burning out, etc. And I'm sure it's not the only example, thank you. So yeah, I mean, that's a massive issue, not only because it's a pollution issue, it's also a health hazard. And then, I mean, obviously it's not controlled, which means that if it runs away, then people's lives are in danger. Okay, then two more issues. E-waste. Does the government, the department, have a specific plan? I remember last time we spoke, there was still a kind of a biggish problem in KZN, specifically close to the coast, with e-waste dumping, etc. What is the effect on the environment there? Because, I mean, it's just been laying there. I mean, does the department have a plan to remove it, etc., etc.? Okay, last one, recycling. Why hasn't South Africa gone more aggressively, if I could put it that way, towards a recycling country, the recycling economy? What is the feasibility of us banning plastic bags? I mean, there's a couple of Northern Africa countries with economies 50,000 times smaller than ours, but by banning the bags, the plastic bags, there's all sorts of a ripple effect, you know, that's happened. It's been a pro and not a con. Would South Africa ever be that type of a country that will be able to ban it or start banning it in the metros or something like that? The bigger issue for me specifically is that in a recycling environment, there's so many jobs that are literally just waiting to be created. You read all these stories, successful stories, and on a small scale. But I was thinking, if the department could maybe, like, you know, if it comes from the department, the amount of jobs will just be astronomical. And will we incentivize it? Do we have a plan? And then, basically, I want to know the plan of action. And then just a last point. Last time we were busy with budget, on one of your points in the Department for Chemicals and Waste Management, jobs created in waste management sector, the target was 500, but only 95 jobs were created in that period of time, which means it's not even 20%. And if you go work it out, you're 9% underspent in your first quarter budget. Yeah, it's the first quarter. Is there a specific reason for it? And then also, I mean, if we speak about landfill now, if we speak about waste management, etc., it's clearly an issue that people are quite passionate about. What is the reason that 20% of the jobs were created? What happened to the rest of the 80%? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyambi, and then Honorable Khadis.
Thank you, Chairperson. The department talked about the 90 private-owned landfill sites. So I just want the department to explain to us how the private landfill site came into being and who did it serve. The second one is that how do we ensure the health or well-being of South Africans in private communities where municipal waste collection services are not available? For example, in a Tuhan community in Sudan. So the last one is what significant role church tennis takes place in the landfill site from being an illegal site to a licensed one? Does the site get re-engineered or what a primary happen? Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Khaled. Thank you so much, Chair. I would like to highlight two things which I find it very worried to me, Chairperson. The first issue, I'm fully aware that the disposal of waste in the local sphere of government is the responsibility of that municipality. But in this particular instance that I'm mentioning, I'm aware, my colleague has just mentioned that some of the landfills that you find that you see tire burning. I'm there because the representative from the tire industry is also here. You find tires that are burning on the landfill side. If they are not burning, they are down today. I remember I raised this issue on the previous meeting that we had where it was mentioned to us that There was an agent, I don't know whether it's an agent or the contractor that was dealing, a time to collect all the waste that are actually registered. Up to this point, I'm from KZN, I've been in a number of towns in KZN, and I haven't seen even a single vendor collecting this waste tire. I go to the landfill site, I always see the tires, actually, a huge tires in the landfill site. I also mentioned on the previous meeting that specifically in a few not at all, in a Bakulusi municipality, where it was strange enough that I saw the people, but 400 families living approximately 300 meters from the landfill site. But on top of that, I also discovered that there were huge piles of tires that were there in that landfill site. And I'm wondering, what is the responsibility of this? What is happening? Are they still collecting these tires? As we were told previously, because they are still there. I've been in the local government election. My colleagues for the tires that were bent, I'm sure the other colleagues of that, they also see these tires on the landfill site. Well, what is the visa doing? The other one that I'm worried about, Chairperson, I see that there was a study that was done by Jeffers and Green to look into the issue of the backlog of the landfill site. I find it very strange if you see, if it mentioned on the report that some of the sites never existed. I don't know, who was giving the impression that they were sites there? And when you go there to physically do the inspection based on those sites, someone was telling me like, well, I was trying to sort of like inflate the fees for the study. I'm not sure. I would like to have more clarity on that, because really one, if you do a job and then come back and give us the information that is not there, it's still lying. That's a lie. We are paying for things that we have never done. Thank you, Chief Justice.
Thank you, Honorable Mark. Then, last one, Honorable Mubik. You want to come in the last? You want to wish? You want to think?
I've got a few questions. Last year we were visited by representatives from CIDE at a joint meeting with the portfolio committee. And one of the issues that was highlighted, which we know is that in terms of, it's also the third committee, we know that Sweden is importing waste. They've run out of waste. So they're generating electricity out of that waste. All their hospitals, all their buses, and some of the schools are run on the basis of energy extracted from waste. Now, we have read last year, and it was read last year, that it has an equity. It has signed an agreement with a European country to import the waste from Lebanon. It was in the paper. I read it last year. Now, I want to check, in terms of your scope, what are the developments in that regard? That's the first one. The second one is that in the interest of NEMA, what are the responsibilities of the provinces and municipalities? But the key question is that, are all the municipalities in this country operating on a basis of a waste management strategy? All the municipalities? Are they? That was also the question that I posed last year. Because once we don't address it, we will not solve the current waste challenges. And if not, are there any deadlines for all municipalities? I know the metros have clear waste management strategies, but the local, especially the weak one, category B. Are there any deadlines that the department, which is playing an overarching role in waste management, have any deadlines around those municipalities that have no waste management plans and strategies to operate? Now, the last one, Chair, it relates to the issue that waste is wealth.
But in terms of the waste recycling enterprise development and support, we are not seeing much development in this arena. I know the DDG in the past has reported around the waste recycling enterprise development and support, as well as the wholesale chain. But from the province that I come from, there are no skills developed in the sector. So how far are we in relation to the progress around the waste recycling enterprise development and support, as well as the value chain, the waste value chain that you have been speaking about? Lastly, is the slow pace of transformation in which waste management process management and process. I was going to raise a question of Rijika, but it is a contentious issue, as I indicated last time. Yes, I'll pause for now on those questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. That could have been the brief, but I think the report deals mainly with the status, like we are just being informed of where we are. But it's not surprising why people ask even other questions that are not being addressed by the report. It's tempting always overlap because probably should have anticipated that we'll go beyond just knowing what is actually happening. But let me get to the few questions that I have. Now that you know how an ideal landfill site should be managed in terms of the personnel and everything else, regulating the times and all of that, and we know that the country still has got a long way to go in that regard. There's personnel that is skilled to manage all those and so on and so on. Have we as yet developed any plan, projection, for saying probably the country could be ready to manage landfill sites effectively, efficiently by this particular time? Like if you have a vision to say 2030, we want the country to be at this point and not just move along, you know, providing leadership to say everybody must work against that set again. I think you get that particular point. The second one, by now, what is the municipality's attitude towards budgeting for learning feedback? Because the issue of funding, they cannot always rely on funding that must be coming from national or elsewhere. They themselves need to reach a point where they understand that this matter is serious and they have to budget for it effectively. Where are we? Are we getting that fear of government taking this matter as serious as we do at national level? Or still particular when they're faced with water challenges, electricity and other competing needs, do they relegate issues of dumping site or illegal landfill site to the very face? Do they think that we are nowhere closer to getting this matter addressed very well? You did indicate that the issue of landfill sites or any of landfill sites and so on and so on affect the dignity of our people, which I agree. And you see the program of assisting them is about to come to an end, but they need to deal with this in themselves. But I think it's the program of awareness should be an ongoing program, because it will take us some time for our people to have the culture where they understand that just dumping waste anywhere and so on is not all, you know. And I don't think some people don't see a problem dumping anywhere, the next thing that generates a lot of other diseases or other things in their neighborhood. So So that kind of awareness for me should an ongoing thing that national keep on assisting or ensuring that we are going to do this. The last slide, but one slide on way forward. This a lot of issues which should focus on. Yes. But I'm saying we cannot just list them. And these are aware of what may need to be done. But all we need is a plan or some strategy to deal with, to say this is how we are going to handle, and not just list them as they are. Because it's one thing to be aware of the problem, it's another to understand how that problem should be handled. You know, if we were to say on each and everyone, what is it that should happen by when? You know, because at some point you must hold you accountable. Not you alone. I understand that you have got local government, provincial and national. But all of you dealing with that in the sector, we should be able to hold each other accountable as well. What is it? What's the plan? The last one is the effective coordination among the three spheres of government that we are at one in terms of implementing this act, the strategies and everything else. Or national is pushing the other in terms of implementing these policies and laws, or they are willing participants because they understand what should happen in this road. All I'm saying, do you think where you sit, there's this daily of all the spheres, or you have got difficulty, you may need to be assisted by some of us where we sit, going to our counterparts at provincial level or even at local government. Just to assist you to ensure that this is realized or you somewhat satisfied in terms of how all the spheres are playing their role in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you are ready to respond to this thing, and I think
I think the register one, I hear some people, my colleagues, bringing it on board. I was going to prefer a situation where we go thoroughly into that one at some point. Even if it's not drilling down on it because they were not ready to present that, but we need a proper briefing on that matter at a later stage, when we could go into almost all the issues that regard this and its operation, other than for them to respond piecemeal or at face value. You know, in passing, I think we need more information as to what is actually going on there.
I see honorable member.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. Mine is a simple, just one clarity. It is stated that the department has spent approximately 32 million from 2013 to 2016 on this project. I just want to know, does this include the private side or only the licensed ones? And then I think the department needs to break down, because I think we need to know how this money was used. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Honorable Khaled. Follow up. Okay. All right. If you are ready to respond, the DG, this 59 landfill sites that are not licensed, do you know where they are? How are they operating? Why do they continue to operate if they are not licensed? Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for the question. I'm going to try, which is myself and Mr. Governor, with managing the project on the numbers and the statistics, Mr. Governor will handle those. I just want to start then, Chair, from dealing with Honorable Makabela's broad questions, and we'll take it from there. I think as you said, Chair, and you know, with respect to ours, that waste is a very big subject, and we're always tempted to ask a lot of questions because it affects all of us, and it's something that's visible, it's in your face, it's there all the time, and it's something that you can't just, you know, turn your eye away from because it's there in your face. And so at a very broad level, we are managing waste through the National Waste Management Strategy, which has 8 goals, and it's been in place for 2009. And that strategy calls for a 20% waste diversion from landfills. So 20% of waste by 2019 should be recycled. So that means that 80% should be going away from landfill sites. To date, we have almost 90% of our waste, municipal waste, that ends up in landfills. And it comes off a culture where landfilling was a cheap option. It comes out of a culture of poor awareness, poor environment consciousness, if I can put it that way. As we're moving forward now, in terms of how we are pricing waste, we've published a waste pricing strategy where we're putting a value on waste. And the same would go for the minister's call now for industry waste management plans. I've spoken out before where we valued waste now as something, the recycling economy, as about 25 billion rand per annum and growing. So when we put out these types of numbers, when we talk about recycling economy, when we talk about circular economy, the awareness around all of this is that waste is wealth, and waste is a resource. Waste can be reused, can be recycled, and so forth. So I think the plan says that moving forward, that waste should, all our waste should not be going to landfill. If we look at an ideal situation, nothing should be going to landfill. You know, you have concepts in the world around zero waste, concepts even around issues around toxic waste, the circular economy, cradle to cradle, and so forth. But we're in a situation in a developing country, we come off a base of large-scale industrialization, mining, manufacturing, big chemicals, industry chemicals, complex manufacturing and so forth. And we're saying at this stage in time, we will always have something that we will call residual waste, and it must go somewhere. So after we've taken out the paper, the plastic, the bottles, the cans, the glass, and everything that can be recycled, there will still be some residual waste that would be left over. That's the first thing I need to say. The second is that if we had imposed a law tomorrow forcing everybody to recycle and all municipalities to recycle, the next question would be asked is that do we have the necessary back-end infrastructure at the municipal level to actually deal then with all the recycled sections? Do we have the industry that would buy them immediately? Do we have the markets for recyclable goods where consumers would buy recyclable goods and so forth? So the whole value chain that we need to address, and we have been addressing right from the time we amended the Waste Act. We imposed, we did three areas. It was regulatory reforms around all our regulations. We did an economic reform. We introduced a pricing strategy. And we did an institutional reform where we established a Waste Management Bureau to manage this whole recycling economy. So Honorable Makabela, if you're asking what is the plan, when will we be ready to say that landfill sites are being properly managed? When we started, I said that this was a moving target. I would say comfortably that we have made a lot of progress around awareness. I would say comfortably we have made a lot of progress around regulation to a point where people may argue, are we over-regulating people? We have made a lot of progress around licensing and telling people, when you license a landfill site, the permit comes with a list of conditions. There's a whole list of conditions saying the site must be fenced. It must be monitored. You must report on the volume. You must report on discharges. It is illegal to burn, and those are all the conditions. So in terms of leading proactively, I would say that we are getting very, very good support at a coordinated level between the provinces, the municipalities, and ourselves. Institutionally, we are well coordinated, I would say that. To answer the question around accountability and the effectiveness, are we being effective as a sphere of government? And if I can take just this one project alone, there was lessons learned, but eventually we knocked down a massive backlog of, from 600 odd, when we did the full thing, 341 right down to now about 50 sites that we will complete in this financial year. The question around, are we drilling? Are we coordinating? Are we talking? Yes, we are. And I think we've achieved a lot in terms of just getting this mission out. That, the sites have to be licensed, they must be run according to a certain standard, they must be run according to a certain law, and all of that. The issue, and reported out in the list of issues, is one of the key issues we've managed to identify, even through our waste quarter, where we meet annually between the provinces, the local government offices dealing with waste ourselves. One of the key issues is the issue around funding. So typically, when municipalities receive their allocations from Treasury, typically a municipal manager will allocate, for waste management, for waste collection and all of that. We've had problems in the past, and I can say that there's been a massive improvement in terms of prioritizing the waste function. Before it was left, as you say, in the peripheral. It was an afterthought in some of the municipalities. But we are making a massive ground in terms of prioritization. But as you can imagine, there are other challenges facing the country at that level. There's issues of healthcare, of sanitation, of water, there's issues of housing, stormwater, when there's a flood in that area, for instance, funds are immediately reprioritized. When roads are washed away, immediately reprioritized. Waste has been an afterthought. And we are changing that massively in terms of how we're working through COPTA and MISA and Treasury to put in place what we call appropriate funding models. So the way you derive a waste tariff, a collection tariff, for instance, and this is what we're trying to get through Treasury, and we're getting some down there, it's similar to how Water Sanitation does the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. So like in MWIC, we're saying something like that has happened for waste, where you develop a special infrastructure grant for waste infrastructure. You deal with the proper tariff for collection of waste. So the question to be asked is that, is the tariff model for collection appropriate? Is it enough? Does it cover the entire value chain from collecting to disposing and managing landfill sites and so forth? So what I'm saying here is that we are going to see a shift. We have a massive tanker almost hitting for the iceberg, and we're saying we have to slowly move that. Moving that means telling people that it's a bad idea to put waste into a landfill, and you need to recycle and recover more and more of that. And we are doing it here this year with the minister's announcement for industry plans to be submitted. So the plans cover paper plastic packaging, it covers electronic waste, and it covers lighting as well. So the packaging is plastic, it's paper, it's glass, it's aluminium cans, it's all of those things that should never go into landfill site, and there's a massive value that is said that goes with that. And under awareness chair, we also ran what we call a waste picker study. We engaged 60,000 registered waste pickers in South Africa. We know where they are, we know where they operate, we've been dealing with aspects of safety, their livelihoods, and the issue of dignity and so forth. And we're saying we cannot perpetuate these undignified ways in which people are picking in landfills, the way they deal with things even on the streets. And we are putting in programs which we call tools of trade that we are working with Treasury in terms of how we dignify this more, how we work with the waste to formalize it, to put norms and standards, to get safety equipment that they can use, and so forth. Then, Chair, in terms of Honorable Marilo's question, I know you like the question about Sweden and why we are not using old waste and so forth. The issue with the Nordic countries and all of it, their climate is so severe, they need heating in the winter and all of that. And we're saying, do we really need all of their type of energy. They use a lot of the energy for thermal heating. The other aspect was that waste can actually also be converted into electricity. And if we have an energy security from this country, that can be done as well. We face a lot of opposition from NGOs in terms of burning of waste. So there's some technology that's used to burn waste or incinerate waste. This is something that's called dioxins and furans, which can cause cancer. And in South Africa, we've had a lot of opposition from NGOs and civil society in the burning of waste to recover energy. And we also did our own studies in asking ourselves, is it better to burn the waste or is it better to recycle the waste? So typically what Sweden will do is that they will collect all kinds of mixed waste, plastic, bottles, paper, packaging, everything, put it in an incinerator, burn it, take the energy, convert it into steam, and they use the steam in piping an entire city for heating buildings and so on, in terms of hot water. And we're saying that we here in South Africa, we should be recycling the waste, taking the waste out of the waste stream. So the bottles must go back into new bottles, plastic back into new plastic, metal cans back into new metal cans, and we work with the big manufacturers. So for instance, Coca-Cola, we will stipulate on the bottle a recycled content. Year one, year two, up to year five, you must keep improving in terms of how much recycled material you can use in this. And so, we may be adopting a different approach in terms of how we use our waste. Rather than burning it, we're saying we can use it. Reuse it to make materials, put it back into new products and so forth. Most countries have a need. They don't have forests, they don't have, they can't use electricity for that type of heating. They're using waste and they import waste from other countries. And so the matter that you raised was the issue around Amdoni municipality, Amdoni. What happened there was that the municipality took a decision in Exco Council. They made a decision that they could import the waste from Lebanon. That waste never came to South Africa. It never reached our shores. It was an Exco decision. There was no contract signed, nothing. We got very, very involved in that, the minister, the mayor there. And there were people peddling. We get companies coming and saying, can you waste from Lebanon, and we put a stop to that. There are strict controls on importing of waste into the country. We have to pass a lot of laws, the Basel Convention, which controls the transboundary of waste in the world, and also our own controls through DDI and the International Trade Administration Commission that requires all kinds of permits before any waste is brought into the country. So that never happened. And your question around our municipality running on a proper waste management strategy. And I made reference to the integrated development planning at the municipal level, where they are required to have a plan for waste management. So we've been assisting them for many, many years on what is known as an integrated waste management plan for municipalities. We've funded many of those, many municipalities, and we continue to do so. The metros, I would say, are run well. They have some very, very highly efficient landfill sites, very highly and well engineered sites. And with the lower classes, I would say about 80% or so of landfill sites are managed well between the metros and the districts. We have a few that are unsightly, and most of the time we go to check them out, they're actually not a landfill site. There's an illegal dump. It was never meant that a municipality would plan a landfill site in that area. But Mrs. Governor will deal with that. In terms of the recycling enterprise support program or development program, which, Chair, we went on a call earlier this in February and advertised for proposals across the country. We received about 205 proposals worth about 4.1 billion rand, and they range from a project that was 2 million to a project that was over 100 million. We've adjudicated all the projects. It's busy between us and Treasury now in terms of finding the money to allocate to these projects, and it's looking very favorable, I can say that. To what extent we will be able to do all of them, I'm not too sure. As you can imagine, we have budgetary constraints at this moment in time, but with the money that we see coming through the waste management plans and also the levies from plastic bags and so forth, we are able to start funding many of these. The slow pace of transformation is also a matter that we've heard many times, and we are addressing that. It is taking time, but the sector is transforming. The whole aspect, in fact, of the recycling enterprise support program, and it was very clear in the terms of reference, it was only for disadvantaged communities, it was only for black industries, it was only for black companies, and that's the brief that we got from the MSTs and the ministers. Moving on, Honorable Fadeber, in terms of the recycling of tiles, we're working off a base of where there was no collection of tiles, to a point now where we at about 63% since the research started the collection in 2013. And I do hear you in terms of areas where you're saying there's still tiles going to landfill, you're still seeing tiles being burned, and there are those findings. We've done our own findings, the Green Scorpions, and the father is here testified to that. We've audited many of the sites, the depots and collections and so forth. What we observing is that largely across the country, we're not finding tiles in the environment anymore. Because of the value to these tiles, they are being collected. Jobs are being created, albeit maybe not on an ambitious scale that we originally envisaged, but there's a massive increment we think in terms of the collections of tiles. We do audit Rhodesia, and we are busy with an audit where we are trying to validate the results that they provide to us. We do our own audit for landfill sites, and we're seeing a massive improvement. The large hazardous landfill sites, the very large metro sites across the country, you do not find tiles there anymore. And I've been there myself, to the very large metros and hazardous sites. It is illegal, in fact, for tiles to go to a landfill site anymore. In terms of the, do you want to handle, Michelle, the 90 privately owned sites and the statistics around that?
Thank you for those questions. I think as well, when we come back to report to you, we've got a better perspective on what to cover moving forward, so thank you very much for those. In terms of the 90 privately owned sites and those that we commissioned, you know, the question that was raised is why can we not regulate them, or why are they closed down? Now, this is a combination of things. The reason we closed down a large number of them is purely because they were holding the ground. And we did not want that to become formalized waysites, and so we advised that those be closed down, cleaned up, and the facilities nearest to those particular areas must be dealt with or used rather for those services. There are, however, about 70-odd private landfill sites in the country which are, in fact, well-managed. And those we manage through the licensing process. We've got stringent conditions, and we monitor against those conditions. And if there are issues, we immediately address them to bring them into compliance. In terms of closing down, your question on closing down illegal sites and how do we rehabilitate that and who's responsible, what we've done is through this survey, we've actually gone to the municipalities, and they've helped us to identify which are those sites which are illegal or illegal. And so what happens is, together with the municipality, we then decide on how that rehabilitation would work. Now, fortunately for us, those sites which were holes in the ground were very much easier to deal with, if I could put it that way, because they were very new sites, and so when all of that waste was removed, you know, the condition of that ground where that waste was removed from was actually quite intact, so there were not leaching. There wasn't the chance given, basically, for that waste to start future, you know, coming rotten and then developing leaching. So that I can say we've got municipalities to actually do that. In terms of the decommissioning licenses as well, these are for the slightly larger sites which have been operational for quite a while. And the reason we should decommission licenses for those is because the re-engineering of those sites will cost millions of rands. And so the municipalities have opted to close that, cap it. But closing and capping does not mean your responsibility. You shy away from your responsibility. We actually have a 30-year liability period which we attach to the municipality for constant groundwater monitoring so that we can ensure that that contamination, if there is any, does not reach the groundwater resources. So we are following up on that. Okay, so there was a question raised in terms of private land for sites. How did they come into being? So in this country, the municipal land for sites are covered to a large extent general waste. But there are industries and factories around this country and also from the mining sector where the waste that is generated from there is hazardous by nature. And the municipal systems and municipal land for sites cannot handle that kind of waste. And that's created sort of like a niche market because it's extremely expensive. We're talking hundreds of millions of rand to actually build these landfill sites. So the private sector saw that as a niche. They applied to us and said, look, there are waste streams out there for which there is no treatment option. There are no proper disposal options. And hence, they went in and said, we will build landfill sites that would be able to handle the highly hazardous waste that the country is generating. So again, that's how you've got the private sector coming in and the private landfill sites being constructed. We do monitor them on a rigorous basis. I mean, in terms of their conditions, and their conditions are much more stringent than those that would apply to a general landfill site where the risk is not as high as when you are dealing with a highly hazardous material. In terms of waste collection in the city Karma, I think that is something we will raise with our municipalities because collection of waste within any area is their responsibility. But I'm glad you pointed this out to us, and we will then take it forward and ensure that we report back to you the next time as to what has happened in that regard. In terms of the changes from illegal to licensed and how this is done and whether the site is re-engineered, yes. The simple answer there is yes. One would have to look at exactly what is being disposed of at that landfill, and we jointly with the Department of Water and Sanitation through their engineers work with the municipalities to get them the best designed landfill site and help them in terms of how do they then dispose waste while still trying to line a particular site. So that is happening. In terms of the study by the Farrers and Green, yes, there is this impression that is given where there were what we call ghost sites. And like I said, the way we went into this initially was that we worked with the municipalities. And we took our lead from them in terms of identifying where the sites were. And, you know, as time goes by, initially we were given many, many sites. But when we started going through the process with municipalities and indicating what will be involved in terms of operating these sites properly, I think they took a step back and said, no, for the smaller sites, that's not going to be financially feasible. And hence these sites, it would be cheaper to then remove the waste from those sites rather than to formalize it into a waste disposal site. So hence, it's been a rationalization process as well, followed by the municipalities and by us. And we have to look at what can we do best with the limited resources we have. And so that number keeps changing. And I think we've finally gotten to a stage where we're saying, those 69 that are outstanding now will be the last because, we've gone through this entire lengthy process to try and resolve those issues. But however, it also is a question of demand, and some landfill sites are operating quite close to their capacity. which is something we need to now start planning for, because if they run out of space, they would need somewhere else to take their waste to. And as much as we are pushing the recycling economy, like BDG has said, we still need landfill sites. And we will have to then work with the municipalities to determine what is the best way forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Govender. If I can just handle the rest of the questions then. Some honorables are dealing with the matter of plastic bags, the recycling economy, and the number of jobs that were created. So the question was, would it be feasible for South Africa then to ban plastic bags? And I take it it's the plastic carrier bags used for shopping and so forth. So you know that in 2002, Mr. Vali Musa introduced the plastic bags regulations, where we actually started to deal with the matter of the plastic littering across the country. And I must say, as we reported it previously, that scene or that look of what they call the national flower at the time changed dramatically since the regulation came into force. And where we put the remaining bag sticker so that they could be recycled more and more by the retail sector. So the question then, you know, we'll have to ask is that if people don't have a bag to put the groceries in, when they're buying groceries, what will they do? So there we have options of reusing bags, carry the bags, bring in cardboard boxes and whatever and so forth. We have done these surveys and we actually deal with things where we talk about material flow analysis. So we talk about the amount of plastic and polymers that gets produced, say, by vessel eventually that goes into these plastic bags, that eventually goes into the environment. We do a full value chain analysis to say how much of polymer resin was produced per year, how much was made into plastic, how much got recycled, how much went back into what we call the circular economy, cradle to cradle. So we're saying that the issue of maybe plastic not going to landfill is something that we can look at, and we've been dealing with that for quite a while. And that we're saying in terms of creating a disincentive of any recyclable good or waste like plastic going to landfill, we should deal with putting a better price to it and deal with the economics around it. So we put a price on something so that we put some value on it and won't throw it away. And that's exactly what we've done now with the industry waste management plan. So it becomes valuable now for people to collect this plastic and all of that and to have recycled. So the question will be asked then, are we seeing a lot of plastic bags in the environment? Is more the question, you know. And we think from our own analysis here that that is not the situation. We're seeing a lot of other types of plastic packaging, we're seeing bottles and so forth. But plastic bags that we pay, I think, about 45 cents for them now, the question should be asked, should we be creating more disincentives so that people use less plastic? And there's been this case where since 2002 we have never raised the tariff. I think it was raised for 3 cents last year. Should we consider raising the tariff to further disincentivize the use of plastic? That's the second question. The third part says that we are working with the famous brands, we are working with the retail sector to introduce other alternatives to plastic bags. You would know that famous brands like McDonald's, KFC and all that, they do not use plastic bags. It's paper bags. Then the question is, can you use a paper bag to put all your groceries in? And maybe not. So there are other alternatives. So the bags that you can buy at Woolworths, the ones that are recyclable and also biodegradable, are more expensive than the normal bags, and you find a lot of hardware also shopping those types of things. So we take your point, and we will investigate this, honorable member, and look at how we can do that. I know there's some cities in the world, we know they've done it, and there are a lot of control mechanisms for that. On the matter of jobs, there was a target of 500 in the quarter, and it was only reported 95, and and what really happened there. Again, this target clearly relates to the deeper target around the jobs target that they've given us. We've been working with them around this massive decrease, and we've been auditing. We are busy with the audit now to verify this, and we have not completed that, but it is also our concern. What we have heard is that there's been, with the economic situation, a slight decline in the number of tires also produced, and so some decline in the number of the jobs that could be created in, for collections. We are verifying that number, and when we do complete our audit share, we will come back in terms of that audited figure. So we try to answer the questions. I'm not sure what else is there. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So we missed two questions. I missed two questions, Chair. Your question with regard to the 69 sites and illegal sites at the moment and how they're being managed. I've put that slide up again. Out of that 69, these are the 55 that we are currently licensing, and it shows in which provinces all of these sites are currently. You will notice there that the Western Cape is missing from that because we've licensed all of their facilities in the last round. The remaining 14 are being dealt with through the licensing process by provinces at the moment. So there's a lot of work that's currently going in to deal with that last 69 sites at the moment. The question on the 32 million rand, you know, in terms of how we spent this, a breakdown of that, we can give that to you. But the stats are that I have in my head at the moment is that for the current process, that is the 55 sites that are being licensed now, there are a number of specialist studies that need to be done. For example, the geotechnical studies, the wetland studies, all of these cost quite a bit of money. And then the rest of that amount is actually spent on the fees by the professional service provider. So that was about 18 million for the 55 sites. There was, I beg your pardon, 11 million for the 55 sites. There was about 18.4 million for the 202 sites that we had done in the last round, and then about 2 million or thereabouts for the ones that were done 2012-2013. So that essentially brings together that total of 32 million. But the majority of that money is spent on the actual public participation being done by the consultants, the special studies that they have to do, the compilation of the reports that need to be submitted, the also when those reports do come in, we send them back if we're not satisfied with the quality. So that's also being covered by that 32 million. I think now we've covered all of those questions. Thank you.
I just wanted to add one item around the rehabilitation of sites. How long does it take? Some of them can take anything from about 3 months to 6 months or years to rehabilitate, depending on the size. There's another branch of the department under environmental programs that actually does do the funding for these sites. And I don't have the number now, but over the years we've rehabilitated a large number of sites across the country and making them more safe and engineered to proper standards.
Last one, Chair. As much as we've said that coordination between the three spheres of government is happening, I'm saying I would be quite excited if you also intervened from your side in terms of, you know, getting that commitment in moving forward. There's no harm in that. I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Follow up, I see. Honorable Hadeve and Honorable Makhulu, quickly. Thank you, Chair. I would like to support the proposal by Honorable Makhulu to further engage on the issue of RDSA, because there are more issues that we would like to host, but for now I don't think they've got the information at hand. Because previously the DDG was able to say he knows exactly where the litter pickers are and they are sitting now. That's what we would like to get for the registers before that one. So I would support the call by Honorable Makhubela to put it on the program to further discuss this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Looking at the slide, but the slide which has been a slide that I've been at the moment, but certainly bringing the following, are we giving urban and rural areas the same attention, or we slightly biased towards the urban area for whatever reason? But coming to the slide, I see the Northern Cape got 25 or applications they have made. You've got provinces like Eastern Cape and KZN, which are so big. In this slide, it's like not anywhere near for the rest of the provinces. Does it mean that the Northern Cape for some time was neglected? What has been happening? You might have let us some or more India in other provinces, but I'm just tempted to let you explain something that you have not written there.
Thank you. On this, that was a proposal which I'm going to deal with when we develop a way forward, but this is another question that
Thank you. Yes, there, because the process has been so long and so lengthy, we've had a lot of the other provinces coming forward with their statistics quite quickly and then being part of the process moving forward. In the last two rounds, the Northern Cape has featured quite prominently because they've finally gotten their numbers together. And then said, look, they've now indicated that they've got a total, I think, over the last two, with about 40 sites. And so that's why we came to them and said, okay, we will push that their sites have a large, their province has a larger number than everyone else, because in the last couple of rounds they did not come forward with many sites. In terms of focus between rural and urban, we're trying to give them the same attention. It depends on the municipalities within those provinces that can come forward with those statistics that we need, because we do have a constraint in terms of the time frame where we can apply for this funding and do this work. And we had to, unfortunately, stay at a point, we've got to now, cut off and move with the process. We're not going to get any other sites licensed, and hence the Northern Cape in this round actually featured prominently, whereas in the previous round they didn't feature as prominently. I think they had about six sites. So that's why, and in Eastern Cape we dealt with almost all of the sites. This was the one that they found this year that needs the attention. The same with all of the other provinces. KZN as well, a large number of sites have already been authorized under the previous round. So these were only the remaining, remainder of the sites across the country. So this is the last. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. I think members would like to discuss the issue of waste tire management program, which is being handled by RDISA. I get a sense that the members would like to get a detailed briefing about that. We'll just pick up that there is an intention by National Treasury as well as the department to move away from the levy which is currently in practice, where tire manufacturers are already, or whatever mechanism that is there, of collecting the fees by the manufacturers, which is being administered by RDISA. There is an intention to move away to a tax. I think it's a tire tax or something like that. I don't know. It's something that we have just picked up. We have not yet received a formal presentation on that, which is something which is very concerning, that there is a push somewhere in another committee to deal with the metals which are supposed to be generated from here in the first place, the claim for the community to be raised. But we will then deal with the issues when we get there. For now, it's something that we have just picked up formally when we interact with our colleagues from other communities. So, I think it's an issue that we'll deal with as a matter of agency. It's quite clear that when we discuss the landfill site, the issue of waste in its broader sense come into the fore. That you can't deal with this thing out of context. So what you need to do, you need to look at the waste in its strategic sense from the point of view of generation, handling, the entire management of waste in our country. You need to look at in its broader sense. So the view that the committee has taken to get this, to deal with this industrial plan, I think it can only be affirmed by the discussion that there was a correct view. So we still need then to schedule that, to look at waste in its entire sense. But also, probably in the same sitting, we can then get a detailed presentation on Rediva, particularly on this intended shift that the department, both the department and National Treasury are then dealing with, which I must emphasize that I find it very strange that the issue is being pushed in a manner that it has been accelerated without the committee having been properly briefed on it. But we'll then deal with it when we get to that. So, I think we have dealt with the issue of plastic, which is an issue that also came in one of our meetings. There is a lady that is collected by National Treasury from the sale of plastic, which I think is emanated from the regulations that we're talking about. But the question is, how much of that which is being generated gets back to the industry, which can then help the industry to utilize whatever funds they have collected? Or is it something that has been collected? It is not coming back to the industry. It is going somewhere. Probably it's going to the Christmas fund. Or it's going to the health. So because once it gets into the national fiscal, it gets into a big heat, it gets distributed to wherever. So it doesn't come back to help what was originally the idea that imposed this levy, use the money that is coming from this to then help in the precisely in the order we will take around the issue of plastic. So it appears that the retailers, it is the money for the retailers now. Because part of the 45%, 25% that you're talking about, part of it goes to the retailers. So how much? 39. So it is the money for them. So we did identify it in the previous discussion that we need to get in a discussion and what will be the plan going forward around this issue. I think I've covered the honorable panel.
Okay. Just remember one issue which I need to bring to the attention of the department. The issue of the toxic waste that is dumped at the Shomweni landfill site in KZN. I would be happy if they look into that issue and give us a report on what is happening there in Shomweni. There is toxic waste that is being dumped there.
Okay,
together with the issue of Fitzgama.
The CC gamma is about collection, I think, of waste. The issue one, you'll give us a report. It says in the next meeting, or you can take it offline. But we are wrapping up now, Honorable Khadi.
the first one, fine. If they don't, they don't. Alright,
thanks for that question. Yeah, it's been all over the media and Kedrin and all that. And as you can see, that there's been enforcement action on the company. I think about a month ago, we suspended operations temporarily on the site. Letters were issued around the receiving of toxic waste. So from the 21st of August, they were not allowed to take any hazardous waste on site, including liquids, sludges, all of that. Earlier this week, they were issued with a what is known as a notice of intention, a pre-directive order. There are investigations that are ongoing by the enforcement team, the environment team, and so that matter is being addressed. We can safely assure you that it's being addressed.
I don't know. Do you also deal with the village? I've just picked up something yesterday, the day before yesterday, of a village into some river stream in Tswane, yeah, which was around oil. The oil from mainland mall. Something that is good.
We do deal with in terms of Section 30 of the Act. It's the emergency incident, and I'm sure if it was reported to us, we will deal with those incidents. Our compliance guys usually go out there for those type of incidents.
So you're not aware of it?
Not yet. I'll check with my guys, I can make sure nothing.
We are aware that both the Gauteng Department of Agriculture and Rural Development have compliance officials as well as our department officials. They've been on site. It was not, what it was diesel from a generator that had spilled from the Millennium Mall facility. It fled down into the river. Department of Water and Sanitation were also at hand to deal with the situation, and I think now the situation is under control, has been dealt with, but I think the reports are still forthcoming in that regard.
Okay.
To determine exactly what the cause was and what the cleanup operation entails and where did all of that go to.
Okay. Yeah, no. I just picked up on the radio yesterday that I think it was reported that it will take about 2 months for complete rehabilitation to happen as a result of that kind of spillage. And there was another spillage for which the thing of the spillage is something that maybe when we find time we can deal with it. But yeah, thank you very much both CCGs and speakers from CAMI. Honorable members, thanks for your questions and your presence. We have received approval that members can attend Kimberley Park next week and the site. So we are only 47. Unfortunately, the member who just ran us has indicated that it's short notice, won't be able to be part of the delegation. But in any case, when we did the submission, we were only looking at the then committee members. So, yeah, we're discussing with the department about other things. But just to allow that we'll be attending both events. So then the Chileka will then communicate to the members about handling arrangements from Monday. And then we'll be there. But this is our last meeting for a quarter. The panel for this parliamentary quarter. We are meeting again on the 11th of October. We will be dealing with the annual report. when we come back. The BRRR is going to be quite a hectic quarter when we come back. Yeah, yeah. But thank you very much, Honorable Members, for coming and officials for meeting us again.
Thank you.